Morning, Your Honors. Stan Zlotoff for Appellant Lade. Your Honor, this case is not about a free house. It's about the consequence of a bankruptcy claim disallowance. In this case, Lane made a very clear challenge to the bank's right to enforce its obligation, listed it on the initial bankruptcy papers, the Schedule D, listed the objection that it had on the plan. After the bank filed its timely claim, Lane objected to it for the fact that the bank didn't have the right to enforce it and standing. The bank let the claim objection go to default. Thereafter, Lane noticed up the bank's objection to confirmation. The bank withdrew its objection. The plan got confirmed, and the bank disappeared for 4 years. The context in which this case was filed, I think, bears mention. The country was in the throes of the Great Recession. Housing.
We're very familiar with all of that. We heard some of that from this last earlier case, right, if you were paying attention to it.
Right.
Let me ask you this. So the BAP did an opinion here, essentially rejecting what the bankruptcy court did, right?
Yes.
And they even they thought it was such an important issue, they even published their opinion, correct? Now, we're not bound by whatever the BAP says because they're not Article III judges. But what's wrong with their opinion? What's wrong with their analysis? Let me put it that way.
Well, actually, part of the first part of their decision, I think, was right on, because they said that the objection based on the bank's inability to enforce the obligation was a substantive claim objection. And they held that the consequence of that was a final judgment that the bank couldn't enforce its obligation. So I think at that point, the matter should have been done. They should have at that point looked to Section 506D, and the one sentence of 506D that says, to the extent that a lien secures a claim against the debtor that is not an allowed secured claim, such lien is void. I think it follows.
Well, let me ask, but here, didn't you say that the bank, what was your objection to the bank's claim?
There were two grounds. One, we said that the bank was not entitled to enforce, was not the proper party to enforce the obligation. And that's taken right out of the UCC, the Commercial Code of California. And secondly, we said the bank didn't have standing.
Okay, sort of related.
They're very related, yes.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so if the bank couldn't enforce the lien, why does that invalidate the lien?
Because of 506D. It's a command in the law. And it's unequivocal, as far as I can see.
I thought the basic principle under 506D is that the lien, well, I don't know if it's under 506D or it's under basic common law, is that the lien survives bankruptcy.
Yes.
Unless there is a clear declaration by the bankruptcy court for some reason that
well,
it's invalid. And that didn't happen here.
Well, the bankruptcy law was substantially revised in 1978. So 506D came about in 1978, and it's that one sentence that I read has existed throughout all the revisions that bankruptcy law has gone through. It was true before 1978. It is true now that a secured creditor, need not participate in the bankruptcy process,
right,
and it can still keep its lien. But all the cases say, if it does participate, that's essential, by filing a claim, that's essentially like filing a complaint, and it's subjecting itself to the bankruptcy court jurisdiction and all the rules and laws of bankruptcy.
Yeah, but basically, isn't the problem here, though, is that your position with respect to the bank was, hey, you haven't proved that you own the lien. You're the wrong person or the wrong entity to enforce the lien.
No. Again, I have to go back to the time. There were lots of bankruptcy filings during the time when this was filed. And there were a lot of challenges made to banks in their proofs of claim. And primarily, the concern was that the banks didn't have their paperwork in order. And the way that these disputes were usually resolved was by the bank bringing its paperwork to court or certifying in some other way that the paperwork was complete, and that would resolve the matter. Here, the bank chose to hide and not take up the challenge and not comply with the normal bankruptcy protocol. It just completely ignored it, as if it had something to hide, as if its paperwork weren't in order.
Well,
and
there were, as you said, the banks were inundated.
Yeah.
Maybe they were just negligent in the way in which they processed this particular claim.
Well, that
their end.
Yes,
they missed the boat.
They missed the boat, and they didn't do anything for 4 years.
But your claim, you keep saying that. But your objections to their claim was you're not the right person to enforce. You're not the right entity. I don't know why that invalidates the lien.
Well, that was one prong was standing, but the other prong was based on the commercial code. That I was basically it was a challenge to their note and the whatever documents would support their entitlement to enforce that note.
So your opposition that you checked the boxes and you filled in, I don't know, I guess it looks like you typed the two in, but it says the basis for the objection is that the claim, and then it goes down, fails to establish that claimant has standing. What do you mean by that?
That was a shorthand for the same commercial code.
You're
objection.
Not the right person.
Yeah. Well, no. That it wasn't, it didn't have the right to enforce the obligation. Or I wanted it to prove that it wasn't the right.
Right. Okay. And the next one was fails to establish that, comma, pursuant to applicable law, comma, claimant is the person entitled to enforce payment on the claim. So that's really sounds like the same thing.
Well, it's more the second part that is the focus. And all I can say is that in bankruptcy courts, that was very common, and everybody knew what it meant. And it didn't mean that there was somebody else other than the bank that was proffering the claim. Rather, it was a challenge for the bank to prove up that it had the right documents, the note. It was the note that was the key here. I mean, that was a negotiable instrument. That's what it needed to prove.
Let me ask you, with respect to what happened here, with the bankruptcy court, if the bankruptcy court had not invalidated the lien, what would have been the state of affairs, just with respect to saying this bank can't enforce the lien? What does that get?
In other words, if we're left with the BAP decision, so
yeah.
In other words, it's not enforceable, but there's a lien.
Yeah. How does that affect your?
Well, I can tell you because I faced it. So after the discharge, Well, after the discharge, I made a demand for reconveyance because, and I think at the same time or thereabouts, a servicer was ready to start foreclosure. In fact, they did record a notice of default, which is the beginning of foreclosure in California law.
Pardon me, can I ask a question? Is your position that a ruling by the bankruptcy court that there was no standing and that the plaintiff or the claimant was not the real party in interest, are those dismissals on the merits?
Yes.
And there are res judicata of the merits.
Well, that's, I want to say yes in this case. I think it's an ambiguous question. I understand what you're getting at, and that's why I inserted or I filed the letter 28J and requested that you look at the restatement, second judgments, section 19, comment A, where it says that under certain circumstances, even though it's not what we normally think is a judgment on the merits, if there's been undue delay, if there's been negligence on the part of the other party, at some point you got to put an end to it. And let me, if I could just read one sentence out of Blenheim, which is, you know, what I think is a case that's dead on. It comes from page 491. HSBC was the bank there. So it says, HSBC just slept on its rights and refused to defend its claim. HSBC refused to defend its lien after it was challenged by the Blenheims for failure of proof, and that was because its paperwork wasn't in order, is the proof, and because their copy allegedly bore a forged signature. In these circumstances, HSBC's failure to respond is more a concession, is more akin to a concession of error than a failure to file a timely claim, referring to some other authority that, that the BAP relied on. HSBC simply forfeited its claim. And that's what I think happened here. You know, 4 years is a long time to wait and keep.
In your case, there was no forged signature issue?
No, we did not allege that, no.
Did you want to save some time for rebuttal?
Yes, may I?
Yes.
Okay. Would this be a good time?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Perfect.
Your Honors, good morning. Louis Landau for Appellees, Bank of New York Mellon, and on the papers, Bayview Loan Servicing, but I want to notify the court that just within the last few days, Bayview Loan Servicing transferred its servicing interest to an entity called New Res LLC, Shell Point Mortgage Services. I'm going to file a certificate related to that entity. This just happened, but I want to make the point here today. That's the second entity in the title, Bayview, transferred its servicing interest. I don't think it changes anything. Just
okay.
Notice.
All right. That's fine.
Your Honor's asked, the BAP decision, what's wrong with it? The answer is nothing. It is a well-reasoned and smart decision that deals with difficult facts. I mean, these are bad facts. We have an objection to claim that went and became final without an opposition, and then what is the effect of that? The BAP found a way through that problem and based it on due process, and I think it's exactly right.
Why is it necessary? I had a problem. Where is the evidence that somebody else owns this note if the objection is correct?
It's proving the negative.
Yeah.
It's not there, Your Honor. It's that this particular party doesn't, but there's a whole world of other people that might.
There's no evidence anybody does.
I understand.
But BAP took the position that if this party doesn't own it, somebody else does, and I don't see any factual basis for that determination.
I think it's the quandary that arises by virtue of the nature of the objection to claim, then colliding with 506D2.
Well,
Your Honor,
you're failing to overlook your own, should we say, negligence?
There was a reason for that claim going unopposed. It's in the record about the lawyer wasn't hired to handle it. it is
what it is. Somebody should have been, you know, a reasonably prudent bank administrator or loan processor or whoever, or a reasonably careful lawyer would have been on top of this, right?
These things happen. And the question is, what is the effect? And Blendheim involved forgery. And so the issue here is Blendheim. It's an issue, interesting issue for the law students that are here today, because there's a Ninth Circuit case, Your Honor was on the panel, that gets very close to these facts, and the question is, does it apply to these facts? And I think that there's five distinguishing factors that are very important. I'll run them down summarily and then go into them. Number one is that the objection to claim was not on the merits of the debt. That came up already. The second is the form and substance of the objection to claim itself, when you actually look at the objection to claim, something Your Honor picked up. Three, Lane admits this debt here. Lane, the appellant, admits the debt. Blendheim disputed it as a forgery. Four, take a look at the plan terms, the Chapter 13 plan terms in the two different cases. And five is bad faith. Let me go through those individually, the difference between the two cases. Objection to claim was not on the merits of the debt. Okay, in Blendheim, forgery. Again, there was a concession of error that the note had a forged signature, so there was no admission of the debt. Lane?
Well, what does it mean? You know, he said, he did say, fails to establish that pursuant to applicable law, claimant is the person entitled to enforce payment on the claim.
Right, that's not saying he doesn't owe it. It's saying you're the wrong holder. So that's the radical difference between Blendheim and Lane. Okay. Lane is never saying he didn't get $565,000 and doesn't owe it. And that's these other points. Two, the form and substance of the objection to claim itself. Your Honors, I would ask that you hold up. It's BAP docket 25, which I think is in the appellate docket here someplace. BAP docket 25 is, I went down to the Blendheim case and pulled the objection to claim out of Blendheim, just like you were holding up the objection to claim here. And you compare them. There's a declaration, and there's a note that has an allegedly false signature on it. There's evidence on the objection to claim. So the form and substance of the objection to claim is very different in the two cases. Three, Lane admits the debt. Lane has always admitted the debt here. Blendheim disputed as a forgery. Lane here admits the $560,000 mortgage, and he owes it to someone. Four, very important, plan terms are radically different. In Blendheim, the plan stated that the HSBC mortgage would be canceled and void. This is in the opinion, the Ninth Circuit's opinion. Here, it's the opposite. The plan here said, until proof of real party and interest status, debtor shall bank the monthly payments that would otherwise be paid to the bank. That was the Chapter 13 plan here. That's radically different. The fifth point is bad faith. There's an element of bad faith here. And that bad faith arises from the fact that the first thing that Mr. Zlotoff said was he's not trying to get a free house, but that's the effect of the ruling here is free house. In Blendheim, the court would not approve the Chapter 13 plan unless the second lien came back into effect once the first lien was voided, because the basis for avoiding the second lien is that it was pushed off the value of the property. So the court wouldn't accept that and said that was in bad faith. Here, that's exactly what Lane is doing. Lane used the existence of the first mortgage to void the second mortgage and push it off the property as not attaching to value, lien stripped it, and then comes back in to void the first under 506D. That's an element of bad faith, and I'm using those words as Blendheim, the bankruptcy court in Blendheim used them to not approve the plan in that case. So, different facts. Radically and importantly different facts should result in a different result, and this is why I say I believe the BAP got it right. Happy to answer any other questions. Thank you, Your Honors.
Your Honor, so Lane, as I said at the outset, Lane did dispute the obligation. For the reasons I indicated.
On standing and real party interest. That's
yeah, the yeah, two. Yeah, but he did dispute. So Lane didn't cook up a scenario where he expected the bank would go silent on an objection to claim, withdraw its plan confirmation, do nothing for 4 years. he didn't have a crystal ball that could possibly have imagined that that would occur.
He just wanted to see the paperwork.
He wanted to see the paperwork, exactly right. In fact, more than that, it's actually unfortunate for Lane. He's actually Dr. Lane. He wanted to fight. He really did. He thought he had something wonderful. And there's, although it did go by default, there's a there's just a snippet, if I can find it really quickly, in the record, where he indicated that he had done a lot of research and was convinced that there was something wrong with the obligation.
He didn't make that part of his objection?
No, because, as I say, again, this goes back to the time, and there was a lot of suspicion that banks were not dealing fairly with their paperwork and not dealing fairly with the homeowners. And so it was a strategy decision that we'd frame the objection as general as we could, so that we, during discovery, we would come away with more documents so that we'd be able to understand the whole story. With regard to the other lien that counsel mentioned, the second lien, again, this was done. There's a two-part stage with regard to lien avoidance. In the first stage is you value the lien, and at the time it was perfectly consistent with policy that the lien, the first stage lien avoidance occurred, and then at the end of the case, the consummation of that. Remember, at all times, the lien hadn't been avoided. You only get lien avoidance in a bankruptcy
right. At
the end of the case.
So is Mr. Lane still in possession of the property?
Yes, yes. There was a stay. We agreed to a stay of enforcement.
Is he still making the payments pursuant to the mortgage?
He hasn't made payments since 2011.
Well, he wasn't making payments under the plan?
No. The plan said he wasn't going to make payments until this issue.
Oh, I thought the plan said he was going to set them aside.
Yes, I don't know. That part I don't know.
Okay.
But he didn't pay to the bank, and the bank didn't do anything about it.
Okay. All right. Thank you, counsel. We appreciate your arguments this morning, and we're going to submit the case at this time. That ends our session for today and for the week, and thank you all very much. And Judge Bay and I will be back out after a while.